Live from the Bloomberg Interactive Brokers Studios, this is Bloomberg Daybreak for Wednesday, October 21st, 2020. Coming up this hour,
Nancy Pelosi and the White House move closer to a stimulus deal, but the timeline for a bill is now in doubt.
A new report sheds light on President Trump's business in China, including a previously unknown bank account.
And shares of Netflix slide as subscriber growth lags.
New York Governor Cuomo says the state is unable to stop virus spreaders from New Jersey and Connecticut. Plus, Joe Biden has a cash advantage over President Trump. I'm Michael Barr. More ahead.
I'm John Stanshauer in sports. The Dodgers won Game 1 of the World Series. The sale of the Mets is closer to becoming official.
That's all straight ahead on Bloomberg Daybreak. On Bloomberg 1130 New York, Bloomberg 99.1 Washington, D.C., Bloomberg 1061 Boston, Bloomberg 960 San Francisco, Sirius XM 119, and around the world on BloombergRadio.com and via the Bloomberg Business app.
Good morning. I'm Karen Moscow.
I'm Nathan Hager. Bloomberg Daybreak is brought to you by Interactive Brokers. IBKR charges margin loan rates from 0.75% to 1.59%. Rate subject to change. Learn more at ibkr.com/compare.
And U.S. futures higher to start the day, 6:01 on Wall Street, and we check the markets every 15 minutes throughout the trading day on Bloomberg. S&P futures up 4 points, Dow futures up 13, NASDAQ futures up about 19, the DAX in Germany is down about 0.7%. 10-year Treasury down 7/32, yield 0.81%, and the yield on the 2-year 0.14%. And this data check brought to you by Withum, a forward-thinking advisory and accounting firm helping clients to be in a position of strength in a new reality of business. Learn about their innovation solutions by visiting withthem.com. Nathan.
Karen, we begin with the latest on stimulus talks. Nancy Pelosi's deadline for a deal has come and gone, but both sides are still talking. We spoke exclusively to the House Speaker ahead of yesterday's negotiations.
We all want to get an agreement because people need it, and it's urgent, and our economy needs it.
Pelosi's looking to strike an agreement with the White House this week, though differences remain on the size of a bill and the timeline.
We have one little bump in the road with the Appropriations Committee that is not sure they're going to be ready, but let's hope they are. We're starting to write the bill, and then we can have the negotiation. But I'm optimistic.
At the same time, sources tell us Senate Majority Leader Mitch McConnell's warning the White House not to strike a deal. He hasn't committed to a vote before the election.
There's another major development out of Washington. The New York Times is out with more information on President Trump's taxes, this time with a focus on his business in China. And here with details is Amy Morris from our Bloomberg 99.1 newsroom in Washington.
President Trump's taxes reveal details about his overseas business deals, including operating an office in China during his first run for president. He maintains a bank account there, according to records obtained by the New York Times. It is controlled by Trump International Hotels Management and is not reported on the president's financial disclosures. In 2017, it reported a large spike in revenue, more than $17 million, followed by a $15 million withdrawal by President Trump. In Washington, I'm Amy Morris, Bloomberg Daybreak.
Thanks, Amy. Turning to the pandemic now, U.S. infections are picking up steam in the South and the Midwest. At the same time, there are new issues tied to vaccines and treatments. Inspectors found quality control problems at an Eli Lilly plant that produces its COVID-19 antibody therapy. That could pose a setback to producing 1 million doses by year's end. And Roche is tempering expectations for a vaccine by the end of the year. CEO Severin Schwan addressed the issue in an interview with Bloomberg.
What I worry about is that expectations are too high. I've read lots of reports where people, already months back would have expected a vaccine to be available for everybody by the end of this year. I think this is completely unrealistic.
The CEO of Roche says most people probably won't have access to a shot until the second half of next year.
Turning to corporate news now, shares of Netflix are down 5% in early trading. The company posted fewer new subscribers than predicted in the third quarter. And Ludlow has the story from our Bloomberg 960 newsroom in San Francisco.
As pandemic lockdowns start to ease in some parts of the world, so too the need for dependence on streaming services. Netflix added just 2.2 million net new subscribers for the third quarter and forecasts it will add 6 million more in the rest of the year, but both are less than analysts were hoping for. The company is feeling the heat from rivals like Disney Plus and NBC's Peacock, as well as user-generated content platforms like YouTube and TikTok, all vying to grab consumers' attention for screen time. In San Francisco, I'm Ed Ludlow, Bloomberg Daybreak.
All right, Ed, thanks. Shares of Snap are up more than 24% in early trading. Quarterly revenue and user growth for the company topped estimates. Advertisers stepped up spending, and consumers increased use of their phones for Snap messaging and entertainment during the pandemic.
And we have another busy day of earnings on tap with results from more than 40 companies, among them Tesla. The car maker is targeting 500,000 vehicle deliveries this year. And Bloomberg's Larry Kofsky has a preview.
Tesla hit a record for third quarter deliveries of more than 139,000 vehicles, meaning it will need a record fourth quarter with 181,000 deliveries to reach its goal. Bloomberg Intelligence says Tesla could be sitting on up to $500 million in zero-emission vehicle credit sales to maintain profitability, even if a lower-margin product mix means loss in manufacturing. Analysts surveyed by Bloomberg are forecasting a profit for Tesla of about 55 cents a share on more than $8.2 billion in revenue. Larry Kofsky, Bloomberg Daybreak.
All right, thanks, Larry. Big tech is in the crosshairs on Capitol Hill, and the antitrust lawsuit against Google may just be the start of it. The case could be followed by more state lawsuits accusing Google of several anti-competitive practices. We spoke with Adam Cohen, Google's director of economic policy.
We think this case is deeply flawed and risks harming American consumers. We compete vigorously in the marketplace. Our industry, our sector, is marked by prices that are free or falling and rapid innovation, and those are really hallmarks of a competitive industry.
Yesterday's action by the Justice Department is the most significant antitrust case against an American company in two decades. The move bears some striking similarities to the legal attack on Microsoft more than 20 years ago.
As the pandemic drags on, Amazon is joining the list of companies pushing back against reopening offices. The company will let corporate employees work from home through June of next year. Facebook, Twitter, and Square are among the firms telling some staff they can move to remote work permanently if they choose.
And there's word of more cuts to the airline industry because of the pandemic, this time in Asia. Hong Kong's Cathay Pacific says it will slash more than 5,000 jobs and eliminate thousands more unfilled positions. The entire reduction amounts to about 24% of Cathay's total headcount. Right now, futures are mixed. S&P futures up a point. Dow futures lower now, down by 9 points. NASDAQ futures higher by 5. So little change in the futures markets right now. 10-year Treasury down 7/32, yield 0.80%. Straight ahead, the latest world and national news. This is Bloomberg. At 6:07 on Wall Street, we bring in Michael Barr for a check of what's happening in New York and around the world. Good morning, Michael.
Good morning, Nathan. New York Governor Andrew Cuomo says the state is unable to stop coronavirus spreaders coming from Connecticut and New Jersey and will try to quell the rise in cases in those states. Cuomo says there is no way to quarantine due to all the connections in the tri-state area.
There are too many people who live in one place and work in the other. It would have a disastrous effect on the economy. And remember, while we're fighting this public health pandemic, we're also fighting to open up the economy.
New York has 43 states on its travel advisory list. Travelers coming from those places must quarantine for 14 days. Arizona and Maryland were added because the states have a 10% or higher 7-rolling-day average. New Jersey, Connecticut, and Pennsylvania also meet the criteria, but they were not added to the list. The governor says the number of cases in New York remains relatively low at 1.25%, excluding hotspots. Cuomo says of the tests conducted in microclusters, mainly Queens and Brooklyn, and in Rockland and Orange counties, 2.9% were positive. President Trump campaigned in the battleground state of Pennsylvania last night. Speaking in Erie, the president once again touted progress on building the border wall and claiming that Mexico will pay for it.
We'll be at 500 miles very soon, and we'll be completed with the wall. And by the way, Mexico, you know, they keep saying Mexico is paying for the wall. They understand that.
Only just a fraction of the wall has been built. Democratic presidential nominee Joe Biden reacted to Senator Ron Johnson's report for the Senate Homeland Security Committee, claiming his son, Hunter Biden, profited off the family name. Biden spoke to WISN.
This is the same garbage Rudy Giuliani, Trump's henchman. It's a last-ditch effort in this desperate campaign to smear me and my family.
Biden has been holed up preparing for tomorrow night's debate. You can hear it live on Bloomberg starting at 8:30 p.m. Wall Street time. Joe Biden's campaign entered October with a war chest that was almost three times larger than President Trump's. The campaign's latest filings with the Federal Election Commission show that Biden had $177.3 million in the bank at the end of last month. Trump burned through almost half his cash in September, ending the month with $63.1 million. Global News 24 hours a day on air and on Bloomberg Quick Take, powered by more than 2,700 journalists and analysts in more than 120 countries. I'm Michael Barr, and this is Bloomberg, Nathan.
Okay, Michael, thanks. 6:09 on Wall Street, time for the Burden Accountants and Advisors Sports Update. Here's John Stashower.
All right, Nathan, game one of the World Series to the Dodgers. They beat Tampa Bay 8-3 in Arlington, Texas. First series game ever played on a neutral field. 11,000 fans were let in. They saw Cody Bellinger at a two-run homer. Clayton Kershaw hurled six solid innings. He allowed only two hits. Mookie Betts, who helped the Red Sox beat the Dodgers in the World Series 2 years ago, helped L.A. last night. A little of everything. Two hits, including a home run. Two runs scored. Two stolen bases. His manager is Dave Roberts.
That's just another element that Mookie brings. You know, he does a lot of studying, and to be able to create stress, and whether it's stealing a base or just being on base to make the pitcher speed up or not execute a pitch, he creates tension, and he's just a heck of a ball player.
First Dodger game out of the last four where Betts did not make a terrific catch, although Bellinger made one. Game two tonight. Before last night's game, Baseball Commissioner Rob Manfred said he'd like to see a couple of the changes made for this shortened season become permanent. He likes starting extra innings with a runner at second base. Of 68 extra inning games, none went more than 13 innings. And Manfred wants to expand the postseason from 10 teams to perhaps 14, not quite the 16 they had this year. Associated Press reports the sale of the Mets from the Wilpons to Steve Cohen has been approved by the owner's committee. Next month it goes to a full vote. Quarterback change in Miami, where the Dolphins at 3-3 have been playing well with veteran Ryan Fitzpatrick, but they drafted Tua Tagovailoa out of Alabama, fifth overall, and when they come back from the bye in week eight, they're going with the rookie. New coach of the Indiana Pacers, Nate Bjorkgren. He had been an assistant in Toronto. John Stashower, Bloomberg Sports. Nathan.
All right, John, thank you. Futures looking for some direction at the moment. S&P futures are up a point. That's little changed. Dow futures down 12, also little changed. NASDAQ futures higher by 10 points. That's a gain of nearly a tenth of 1%. Deeper losses for stocks in Europe this morning. German DAX is down 0.8%. You're listening to Bloomberg Daybreak. Bloomberg Sports was brought to you by Burden Accountants and Advisors. Uncertain about your financial future? Let Burden serve as your trusted advisor and create innovative solutions to help protect you, your family, and your business. Visit BurdenLLP.com.
Markets, headlines, and breaking news 24 hours a day at Bloomberg.com, the Bloomberg Business app, and at Bloomberg Quick Take. This is a Bloomberg Business Flash.
And I'm Karen Moscow. Treasuries are dropping alongside the dollar amid speculation that Washington lawmakers have made some progress on a stimulus package to be financed by trillion-dollar borrowing. Futures have been jumping around this morning, and S&P futures are now little changed. Dow futures down 31. NASDAQ futures down about 3. The DAX in Germany is down 0.8%. 10-year Treasury down 6/32, yield 0.80%. Yield on the 2-year, 0.14%. NYMEX crude oil is down 1.5% on 60 cents at $41.10 a barrel. COMEX gold is up 0.3% or $5.70 at $19.21.10 an ounce. The euro, 1.1848 against the dollar. British pound, 1.3053, and the yen, 104.87. Today, the Federal Reserve releases its beige book at 2 o'clock Wall Street time, and Biogen and Chipotle are just some of the companies scheduled to report earnings today. That's a Bloomberg Business Flash. Now here's Michael Barr with more on what's going on around the world. Michael.
Karen, President Donald Trump's campaign burned through almost half of its cash in September as his reelection effort cut back on advertising in some key battleground states. The latest filing with the Federal Election Commission showed that Trump entered October with $63.1 million in the bank. Meanwhile, Joe Biden's campaign had $177.3 million in his war chest at the end of September. Former President Barack Obama is returning to Philadelphia for his first in-person 2020 campaign event for Joe Biden. He'll speak today at a drive-in rally where supporters will listen to him over the radio inside their cars. In baseball, the Dodgers won game one of the World Series over the Rays. Global News, 24 hours a day, on air and on Bloomberg Quick Take, powered by more than 2,700 journalists and analysts in more than 120 countries. I'm Michael Barr, and this is Bloomberg. Nathan.
Thanks, Michael. It's 6:19 on Wall Street, live from the Bloomberg Interactive Brokers Studios. This is Bloomberg Daybreak, and we want to turn now to take a deeper focus into the coronavirus. Lots of developments just in recent days with cases rising in Europe as well as this country, particularly in the South and the Midwest. along with issues cropping up in the race for treatments and vaccines. Andy Pekosh is back with us this morning, professor of molecular microbiology and immunology at the Johns Hopkins Bloomberg School of Public Health. Professor, particularly in the South and the Midwest, I know the Midwest has gotten a lot of attention now, but we are also seeing cases rising once again in the South of this country. What's your concern as we head closer to the holidays?
Yeah, you know, this virus is expected and is showing this to be increasing in terms of its transmission as people start to move inside because of the cooler weather and take part in more indoor activities as opposed to the outdoor activities that they did all summer. During the summer, we still had large numbers of cases. So clearly this virus is able to spread in this population, in our population, even under suboptimal conditions. We're now moving into places where transmission is going to be even more likely. And I think that's what we're seeing right now is in this wave of cases in the fall. It's very consistent with what we saw in the 2009 flu pandemic and in other pandemics. People move inside and case numbers start to increase.
Are we at a risk of the healthcare system not being able to handle the caseload? Obviously, that was the concern in the spring. Could it be repeated?
Absolutely. It's important to remember that hospitalizations tend to lag by about even up to a week after case numbers. So we won't be seeing the serious case number increases for a few more days now. And any intervention also takes about 7 to 10 days before it starts to show up in the case numbers. So it's these lags that are important to remember as we're thinking about how to reduce these numbers of cases. It's not like if you put in a public health intervention, you'll immediately see case numbers dropping. These things take time, so these surges, as people call them, need to work their way through, and even with an intervention, we'll still be seeing cases increasing.
Parts of Europe are going into lockdown once again. Is that something that could happen in this country? Does it need to happen?
Yeah, I don't know if we need to go into lockdown the way we described it in February and March. But certainly, right now, we should have more information about how cases are being transmitted through contact tracing, and that should then educate and define the public health interventions that need to be put in place to limit the spread of the virus. So we should be much more smarter and much more targeted with respect to the public health interventions we're doing now because we have more data, more knowledge about the virus, and are able to be much more systematic in terms of how we're reducing transmission.
And as we try to move closer to therapeutics and vaccines, we're getting these reports of hiccups along the way. Quality control issues at an Eli Lilly plant in New Jersey. The CEO of Roche telling Bloomberg that the idea of getting a vaccine by the end of this year is completely unrealistic. What should we be thinking about in terms of the race to vaccines? Is it going too quickly, perhaps?
You know, we've made tremendous progress in terms of moving vaccines forward. But, you know, personally, I know from my experiences with seasonal influenza vaccine production, there are always going to be issues as you scale up production of vaccines that are unanticipated, that sometimes just happen because something went wrong in a week or in a day at a manufacturing company. You're starting to see some of those hiccups. It's not unexpected, but all of this plays into the timeline in terms of when people expect to see a vaccine. We expect to see some of these hiccups. It seems like companies are identifying them, they're dealing with them, and importantly, they're being transparent in terms of what's going on. So none of this is unexpected, but all this sort of goes into the expectation of when we should see a vaccine. And again, I agree, I'm not sure we're going to see a vaccine in any significant way before the end of this year because of all of these issues of scale and production that have to be taken care of, it, as well as distribution.
In our last 30 seconds or so here, is the second half of next year, what the CEO of Roche was telling us, is that a realistic possibility?
Absolutely. I think in the new year, we should start to be seeing rollouts of vaccine. The distribution plans are going to be critical. Who's going to be targeted first to get the vaccine? There's going to be increased monitoring of those people as well, too, because it's not like we're just going to forget about safety and efficacy. The first group of people that are getting the more widespread vaccinations are going to be monitored more carefully to make sure that there's no adverse effects. And it's going to take time to immunize as many people as we can in the United States.
Thank you, as always, Professor. Great having you on with us. Andy Pekosh is Professor of Molecular Microbiology and Immunology at the Johns Hopkins Bloomberg School of Public Health. Futures little changed at the moment. This is Bloomberg. And it's 6:25 on Wall Street. Bloomberg Daybreak is brought to you by Audi. Don't let someone else drive off in the Audi model you've always wanted. Visit a tri-state Audi dealer to get behind the wheel of yours today.
Broadcasting live from the Bloomberg Interactive Brokers Studio in New York. Bloomberg 1130 to Washington, D.C. Bloomberg 99.1 to Boston. Bloomberg 1061 to San Francisco. Bloomberg 960 to the country. Sirius XM Channel 119 and around the globe. The Bloomberg Business App and BloombergRadio.com. This is Bloomberg Daybreak.
It is 6:30 on Wall Street. Good morning. I'm Nathan Hager.
And I'm Karen Moscow, and we're just about 3 hours away from the opening of U.S. trading. Let's get you up to date on the news you need to know at this hour. U.S. futures are little change this morning as investors await the latest details on stimulus talks. Nancy Pelosi's deadline for a deal has come and gone, but both sides are still talking. We spoke exclusively to the House Speaker ahead of yesterday's negotiations.
The two bookends of our differences right now, one is state and local, and the other is liability.
Pelosi is looking to strike an agreement with the White House this week, though differences remain on the size of a bill and the timeline.
We all want to get an agreement because people need it, and it's urgent, and our economy needs it.
At the same time, sources tell us Senate Majority Leader Mitch McConnell is warning the White House not to strike a deal. He has not committed to a vote before the election.
There is another development out of Washington, this focused on President Trump's business dealings in China. The New York Times is out with new information on the president's taxes, showing he spent a decade unsuccessfully pursuing projects in China. A company owned by the president reportedly holds a bank account there, which showed a $17 million spike in revenue during his first year in office. That was accompanied by a $15 million withdrawal by the president.
Turning to corporate news now, shares of Netflix are down more than 5% this morning. The company added fewer subscribers than predicted in the third quarter and issued a forecast that missed estimates. We get more from Bloomberg's Charlie Pellett.
The world's largest paid streaming service added 2.2 million new subscribers last quarter, missing analyst predictions of 3.32 million and its own more conservative projection. The company predicts it will sign 6 million new subscribers this period. That compares with an average estimate of 6.54 million among analysts. Charlie Pellett, Bloomberg Daybreak.
All right, Charlie, thanks. On the flip side, shares of Snap are up 24% in early trading. The social media company reported quarterly revenue and user growth that topped estimates.
Tesla, Verizon, and Biogen are among more than 40 companies reporting earnings today. Analysts expect another profit from Tesla, with revenue topping $8 billion. Shares of the electric car maker are up a whopping 400%. This year. Futures this morning, again, little changed. S&P futures up maybe 3 points. Dow futures down 7. NASDAQ futures up 18. The DAX in Germany is down 0.7%. 10-year Treasury down 6/32nds. Yield 0.80%. And the yield on the 2-year 0.14%. NYMEX crude oil is down 1.4% on 58 cents at $41.12 a barrel. And COMEX gold is up 0.3% at $19.21.50 an ounce. Straight ahead, we have the latest world and national news. This is Bloomberg.
Thanks, Karen. It's 6:33 on Wall Street, and this news update is brought to you by the new Land Rover Defender, the toughest and most advanced Land Rover vehicle ever. Test drive the new Land Rover Defender at your local tri-state area Land Rover retailer today. Land Rover, above and beyond. Good morning, Michael Barr.
Good morning, Nathan. New York Governor Andrew Cuomo says neighboring states, New Jersey, Connecticut, and Pennsylvania, are seeing an increase in positive COVID-19 cases. The governor says, though, it would not be practical to add them to New York's ever-growing list of quarantine states. Cuomo says non-essential travel between those states should be avoided.
This is really a bizarre outcome. New York had the highest infection rate. We now have 43 states on our quarantine list.
Arizona and Maryland were added to the travel advisory list. Early voting begins Saturday in New York City. Police Chief Terrence Monahan says officers will be at the polls to ensure there is no violence or intimidation.
Have no fear about going into an election site. We will be there, and we will make sure everyone is safe.
Meanwhile, the Wall Street Journal report says the NYPD will have officers to monitor more than 1,200 polling places across the city on Election Day. President Donald Trump continues to hit battleground states heading into the November election. Trump campaigned in Erie, Pennsylvania last night.
This is going to be bigger than 4 years ago. There's more enthusiasm.
Today, Trump will campaign in North Carolina. Democrat Joe Biden has been holed up for debate prep in advance of tomorrow's face-off in Nashville. Biden did speak to WISN in Wisconsin about the two-minute uninterrupted muted mic rule.
I'm going to try very hard to focus on the issues that affect the American people and talk to them. And I hope they keep the rule that uninterrupted 2 minutes answer.
You can hear tomorrow's debate live on Bloomberg with coverage starting at 8:30 p.m. Wall Street time. Former President Barack Obama is returning to Philadelphia for his first in-person 2020 campaign event for Joe Biden. He'll speak today at a drive-in rally. Joe Biden entered October with a $114 million cash edge over the president. Trump burned through almost half his cash in September, ending the month with $63.1 million. Biden has $177.3 million. Global News, 24 hours a day, on air and on Bloomberg Quick Take, powered by more than 2,700 journalists and analysts in more than 120 countries. I'm Michael Barr, and this is Bloomberg, Nathan.
All right, Michael, thanks. 6:35 on Wall Street. Time for the Burden Accountants and Advisors Sports Update with John Stashower.
Thanks, Nathan. It's been 32 years since the Dodgers' last championship, World Series losses in 2017 and 18. Game one of this series in Arlington, Texas, the Dodgers beat Tampa Bay 8-3. Home runs for Cody Bellinger and Mookie Betts. Betts keyed a four-run fifth inning with two stolen bases. Clayton Kershaw, likely first ballot Hall of Famer some days, had rough moments in the postseason. Not last night. Six innings, Kershaw allowed only two hits, raising his career postseason record to 12-12 into tonight. Sale of the Mets, closer to becoming a reality. Steve Cohen reportedly approved by the ownership committee. Final vote before the full ownership expected next month. In time for what Mets fans are eager to see, Cohen spending money on free agents. The Giants might be getting a key weapon back for tomorrow night's game in Philadelphia. Wide receiver Sterling Shepard, who has missed the last four games with turf toe, practiced yesterday. He'll be a game-time decision. The Eagles are banged up. Like the Giants, they have only one win. No one in the division has more than two wins. The Philly coach, Doug Peterson.
I understand you're the NFC East, right? I mean, everything's still kind of up for grabs, and we're just trying to figure out how to win a game and how to, you know, get guys healthy to play and where we are that way.
Eagles have beaten the Giants seven straight times. Miami Dolphins feel it's time for rookie Tua Tagovailoa to take over as the starting quarterback. So the veteran Ryan Fitzpatrick goes to the bench despite wins the last 2 weeks. Don't expect a new name next year to replace the Redskins. The team president says it's likely that in 2021 they will continue to be called the Washington Football Team. John Stashower, Bloomberg Sports. Nathan?
Okay, John, thank you. 6:37 on Wall Street. And on the economic front today, the Federal Reserve issues its regional economic survey, the Beige Book. Let's get more on that from Bloomberg's Vinny Del Giudice.
Today's Beige Book will help set the agenda for the Fed's next policy meeting set for November 4th and 5th. Bloomberg Economics says the coronavirus will be the theme. Uncertainty, volatility, the negative impact on consumers and businesses. The prior Beige Book, released in early September, reported modest gains in economic activity. The Fed has signaled its benchmark interest rate will probably remain near zero until 2023. Vinny Del Giudice, Bloomberg Daybreak.
All right, Vinny, thanks. Let's turn to corporate news this morning. More cuts are coming to the airline industry, this time in Asia. Cathay Pacific Airways is cutting 8,500 jobs as part of a restructuring. We get more from Bloomberg Daybreak Asia anchor Brian Curtis.
The cost cutting was triggered by the pandemic. Among the lost jobs, 5,300 are at home, with 600 outside Hong Kong. Another 2,600 are currently unfilled positions. Pilots and flight attendants will see changes to their terms of service. Altogether, the reductions amount to about 24% of the headcount at Cathay. That makes this one of the biggest hits yet to the global aviation industry. In Hong Kong, Brian Curtis, Bloomberg Daybreak.
All right, Brian, thank you. Meantime, in Europe, Nestle says the outlook for revenue growth this year has improved. The world's largest food and beverage company forecast organic growth of about 3%. Consumers turned to the DiGiorno Pizzamakers brand during the pandemic, plus an increase in pet ownership drove sales of Purina. Another in a series of mergers that is reshaping the struggling U.S. shale oil industry, Pioneer Natural Resources has agreed to buy Parsley Energy for $4.5 billion in stock. That will create one of the biggest producers in the Permian Basin in West Texas and New Mexico. It's 6:39 on Wall Street. Time now for the Bloomberg Green Business Report. Here's Jeff Bellinger.
For some time now, wind and solar power have been somewhat less expensive than power generated by new fossil fuel plants, but wind and solar have become even cheaper compared to fossil fuels in the past year. Lazard data show that the cost of energy from onshore wind has dropped as low as $26 a megawatt hour, while utility-scale solar is as cheap as $29. The price declines come at a pivotal time. Countries are developing more aggressive plans to battle climate change while also looking for ways to revive economies that have been battered by the pandemic. The cost comparisons make renewable power sources attractive as nations seek ways to stimulate economies that are struggling to recover. A Lazard executive says it is striking how the costs of wind and solar continue to go down. He says if you look at the global economy, unemployment rates, and the need for investment, it's encouraging that renewables are economical. Jeff Bellinger, Bloomberg Radio.
All right, Jeff, thank you. In the world's big financial centers, from New York to Toronto, London to Sydney, rents for inner city apartments are plunging. International students who normally bolster demand are stuck at home, and young renters, the most mobile group in real estate, are finding fewer reasons to pay a premium to live in what's for now no longer the center of things. Manhattan apartments are the cheapest they've been since 2013. Listings have tripled from a year ago, while the median rent has tumbled 11%. This is Bloomberg. And Bloomberg Sports was brought to you by Burden Accountants and Advisors. Uncertain about your financial future? Let Burden serve as your trusted advisor and create innovative solutions to help protect you, your family, and your business. Visit burdenllp.com.
Markets, headlines, and breaking news 24 hours a day at Bloomberg.com, the Bloomberg Business app, and at Bloomberg Quick Take. This is a Bloomberg Business Flash.
And I'm Karen Moscow. And treasuries are dropping alongside the dollar amid some speculation that Washington lawmakers have made some progress on a stimulus package to be financed by trillion-dollar borrowing. Futures, they've been swinging between losses and gains this morning. And right now, S&P futures are up 3 points. Dow futures down 2. NASDAQ futures up 21. The DAX in Germany is down 0.6%. 10-year treasury down 6/32, yield 0.80%. The yield on the 2-year, 0.14%. NYMEX crude oil is down 1.5% or 64 cents at $41.06 a barrel. COMEX gold is up 0.33% or $7.10 at $19.22.50 an ounce. The euro 1.1858 against the dollar. British pound 1.3059. And the yen is at 104.86. And that's a Bloomberg Business Flash. Now here's Michael Barr with more on what's going on around the world. Michael.
Karen, President Trump will be out on the campaign trail in North Carolina today. As for the Democratic nominee Joe Biden, he's getting ready for tomorrow night's debate. A rule change will mute the candidates' microphones during their initial answers to questions. Biden calls the change a good idea. You can hear Thursday's debate live with coverage on Bloomberg beginning at 8:30 p.m. Wall Street time. Even as public attention focuses on the coronavirus outbreak in the Midwest, the pandemic is quietly gathering force in the South. More people are hospitalized with COVID-19 across the South than in any other part of the U.S., according to the COVID Tracking Project. In baseball, the Dodgers won Game 1 of the World Series over the Rays. Global news 24 hours a day on air and on Bloomberg Quick Take, powered by more than 2,700 journalists and analysts in more than 120 countries. I'm Michael Barr, and this is Bloomberg.
There are 13 days until the election, and we are following all the developments leading right up to November 3rd live from the Bloomberg Interactive Brokers Studio. Good morning, I'm Nathan Hager. Some of the latest developments include a new New York Times report on President Trump's taxes and their ties to China. The president threatening to release a contentious 60 Minutes interview after apparently cutting it short yesterday, and Joe Biden's campaign heading into the final debate of the election cycle with a huge cash advantage. Let's get more on all these stories now. Bloomberg Politics editor Kathleen Hunter joins me now. And let's start off with this New York Times story. The New York Times has been running a number of pieces on the president's taxes. And this one, with ties to China, that could be tricky, I think is probably an understatement.
Yeah, I think that's pretty clearly an understatement, or we can call that an understatement. Trump, you know, one of his biggest attack lines against Biden this entire campaign season has been the accusation that Biden, you know, it would be too friendly, would be too soft on China as president. And I think that, you know, the implication that Trump may have paid, in fact, more taxes in China than he paid in the U.S. in some recent years, you know, really cuts against that. And once again, we see, you know, just days before a debate, you know, some revelations coming out in the New York Times about Trump's tax records that give Biden some fodder ahead of that.
Well, let's get into some of the details from this New York Times report. What does it reveal and how does the Trump campaign respond to it now?
Well, what it seems to indicate is that the big sort of takeaway is that Trump has a previously unknown or previously undisclosed bank account in China that, you know, the New York Times quotes a Trump lawyer saying that this bank account was used to pay local taxes and indicating that it's been inactive then for some time. I think that what we've heard from the Trump campaign is, you know, a pretty clear statement from a Trump campaign spokesman that Trump currently has no ties to China whatsoever. And, you know, coupled with an accusation that this is, you know, all meant to sort of detract attention from, you know, Biden's record on China. But, you know, it certainly does kind of, I guess, level the playing field when it comes to, you know, accusations about, you know, each candidate's ties to Beijing, for sure.
And as you mentioned, this could play into a foreign policy debate that we know is going to be coming up tomorrow in the final presidential debate. The moderator has said foreign policy is going to be one of the topics she pursues. Before this New York Times report, President Trump was saying foreign policy was all he wanted to talk about. How could this potentially change things?
Yeah, well, it does sort of flip the script because, as you say, you know, the Trump campaign was complaining yesterday. You know, they were saying that, you know, they had understood at some point this debate was going to be entirely foreign policy focused. And so that was one of the complaints that was out there. And this certainly, again, you know, gives the Biden camp and Biden himself a chance to sort of cut back on one of the president's top, if not top, talking points against Biden. And so I think that, you know, we may see, you know, the president trying to focus on some other topics. But again, it's important to remember that, you know, if we only need to look back to the first debate to see that Trump isn't really necessarily, to put it mildly, the most disciplined politician. He doesn't really stick to the script. And so, you know, the debate commission can have any kind of format that they want. There's really not a guarantee that Trump's going to stick to either the formats or the topics.
Well, you got to wonder whether there might be a little bit more discipline now with the commission saying they're going to cut mics off to the other side so that at least at the beginning of each topic, the candidate in question will get to have at least 2 minutes uninterrupted. Is there a possibility that we could see a little bit more order in the debate tomorrow night?
Yeah, I mean, I think it's hard to imagine that there'll be more disorder than there was in the first debate. And I think that just purely as a function of what you just described, this change in the format, the fact that they're going to be able to mute, you know, both of the candidates at various points, I think that's going to bring, you know, certainly less interruption potentially. But I think it'll be interesting to see because, as you point out, it's only for the first 2 minutes of each section. So, you know, I think a lot depends on the strategy that, you know, both Trump and Biden come to the debate with. And if they come to the debate with a strategy of thinking that they're going to go back to a more traditional format where, you know, pretty much either side is kind of given its time to speak, that is going to be one thing. But, you know, if they come at it with the strategy that we saw Trump particularly employ in the first debate of kind of talking over each other, then we're likely to see that for a majority of the time anyway.
And we'll find out for sure, of course, tomorrow night as our coverage of the second and final presidential debate begins at 8:30 p.m. Wall Street time tomorrow evening on Bloomberg Radio and Television. Ahead of that, Kate, Joe Biden has really built up quite the campaign war chest in these waning days of the campaign. I mean, it's a real change of fortunes compared to where we were in the early part of the campaign.
Oh, yeah, absolutely, Nathan. I remember us talking, you know, just a few months ago about Biden's, you know, fundraising deficit. And so this was a dramatic turnaround for him, particularly given the restrictions of this campaign season in terms of, you know, a lot of the campaigning having to be done virtually. But the bottom line is that he is starting October with three times as much cash on hand as the president. And that's, you know, really significant. And I think that, you know, it puts Trump, you know, in a real defensive posture heading into the final, you know, less than 2 weeks now until Election Day.
Although it has to be said, the polls in the battleground states are tightening up somewhat. Are we starting to see the Biden campaign focusing more of its ad spending on those battlegrounds?
Well, that's why the fundraising edge right now is important, is because, you know, it really is in these sort of final days of the campaign that, you know, the side that has the money is able to really micro target the way that, you know, you're describing and look at the polling and figure out where they really want to deploy resources, and having the ability to be nimble about that and really shift money around and, you know, go into places that look like a little nudge could make the difference, I think is a real advantage for Biden at this stage.
In our last minute here, Kate, what happened between President Trump and 60 Minutes correspondent Leslie Stahl yesterday?
Well, I think, you know, I don't think many of us would have loved to have been a fly on the wall to see what exactly happened, but certainly there seems to have been some kind of discord. It sounds like the president cut the interview short. It sounds like potentially 60 Minutes Leslie Stahl went over the agreed upon time, which I'll just say as a reporter is, you know, really not uncommon. So if that did happen, that would be, you know, not that surprising. But it sounds like now the Trump administration is, or the president is criticizing her for potentially not wearing a face mask. And directly after the interview, 60 Minutes is saying that that was, you know, during a brief period immediately after the interview where, and then she did put a mask on. So it's a little bit unclear exactly what the, you know, nut of the disagreement was about, but it sounds like there was some sort of a disagreement. It was a very contentious interview, and it'll be interesting to see.
Or potentially to read, as President Trump is threatening to release the transcript before the Sunday night broadcast. But we'll leave it there for now. Bloomberg Politics editor Kathleen Hunter, thank you, as always. Karen?
All right, Nathan, thank you. It is 6:56 on Wall Street. It's time for the Bloomberg NJIT STEM Report. It's brought to you by New Jersey Institute of Technology, a world-class polytechnic university that makes a lasting difference in the lives of its graduates and the businesses that employ them. More at njit.edu. Now, here's what's making news in science, technology, engineering, and math. A NASA spacecraft has descended to an asteroid, dodging boulders the size of buildings. It momentarily touched the surface to collect a handful of cosmic rubble for return to Earth. It was a first for the United States. Only Japan has scored asteroid samples. But it could be a week before scientists know how much, if much of anything, was grabbed and whether another try will be needed. As automation and online work gain ground, organizers of the annual Davos Forum are projecting employers will split work equally between machines and people by 2025. The World Economic Forum expects that a new division of labor between humans and machines will upend and eliminate some 85 million jobs globally across 15 industries. But it also expects that 97 million new roles will emerge in sectors like artificial intelligence, content creation, and the care economy involving kids and the elderly. And General Motors has unveiled its much-anticipated battery-powered Hummer. The truck, based on a military vehicle, will have a starting price of $80,000 and a range of 350 miles. Production will start in the fall of next year. And that's the Bloomberg NJIT STEM Report. S&P futures are up about 4 points. Dow futures up 5. NASDAQ futures up 24. Bloomberg Surveillance is straight ahead with Tom Keene, Jonathan Farrow, and Lisa Abramowitz. For Nathan Hager, I'm Karen Moscow, and this is Bloomberg.